Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Not gonna lie, pretty pumped up for today's episode because we're gonna talk about these two big trade candidates, Trey Hendrickson and Micah Parsons, as well as one other defensive end who's still out there on the trade market as well, and take this sort of fantasy type idea and bring it into the realm of reality when it comes to the Green Bay Packers. It's a fun discussion always, no matter what, when you talk about should Green Bay go and get a premium player like this. But we always need to bring it back into the realm of reality and say, does this make sense? Is it logical? Could Green Bay actually do it? If so, what would it cost them? We're going to get into the deep dive, the nitty gritty of this conversation today, because when it exists in the ether of like, oh yeah, Micah Parsons or yeah, Trey Hendrickson, it just sounds enticing. It sounds fun. But what's the realistic downside of doing something like that? What's the realistic upside of doing something like that? I think it's really important to look at both sides of the equation to ultimately try to come to a conclusion as to whether or not a player like this and a trade like this would potentially make sense for Green Bay. Like I said, we're going to get into the weeds on this one, and I'm really, really excited about it. Before we get there, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member, the Hit Kid 9889. Appreciate you for signing up. And now we are over 600 Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. I cannot thank all of you enough. If you haven't checked out those memberships yet, make sure to do so. I've already got some great members-only stuff planned for this upcoming season, not to mention the weekly members-only Q&A all year long. So check out those membership options when you get the opportunity to do so. Now would be a great time. Also, Luigi's new gourmet pizza parlor pizzas, they have hit Wisconsin. Woodman's, $3.99. That's ridiculous. $3.99 for a full frozen pizza. Check them out over at Woodman's. You're going to want to stock up, right, on victory pizzas for this upcoming year. And so just go and get as many as your freezer can hold, and then you're basically going to be set for 2025 and maybe even a little bit beyond that, hopefully going into playoffs and Super Bowl as well. But you can check these out over at luigispizza.com and make sure to follow Luigi's at Luigi's Pizza and pick up those victory pizzas while they're still $3.99 over at Woodman's. On Wednesday, no practice, no news, no notes, no availability, no nothing, right? So that was about as quiet of a day that you get this time of year. So there's really nothing to dive into other than this idea that the Packers could, should, would, maybe can trade for Micah Parsons or Trey Hendrickson. And as I mentioned, I want to take this idea that has existed out in all the talk shows and the radio shows and the podcasts and the blogs and the articles and everything else, and I want to bring it into a realm of what would this actually mean for Green Bay? Should they do it? Could they do it? How could they do it? Etc. The reason that I think this is worth talking about is because A, it does exist out there in the ether. Ian Rappaport is going on the Pat McAfee show and talking about how if there is a team that makes sense to trade for Micah Parsons, it's a team like the Green Bay Packers. We've got Ricky, the anonymous dog insider that may or may not know things, saying that Green Bay has made a significant offer. We've got a random Polymarket account tweet saying that the Packers are making significant offers for Micah Parsons. It's all over the place. And I think when you have, you know, maybe this gap and just like it just kind of water cooler conversation, right? Again, all of a sudden, anything can fill that space. And anyone can say, yes, do it, or no, don't do it. All right, well, let's break down again today what that actually means. The first thing that we need to understand is, can Green Bay actually make these moves? The short answer is yes. And today, what we're going to be going over, when I say make these moves, I'm going to be going over three potential moves. Trading for Micah Parsons, trading for Trey Hendrickson, and signing Jadeveon Clowney, who is still out there as a legitimate free agent defensive end. Those are the three moves we're going to kind of discuss today. I'm going to focus more primarily on Parsons and Hendrickson, but I think Jadeveon Clowney is almost like a control in our group here, because Jadeveon Clowney does not cost draft capital to go get. You can go get him just in free agency. And then, of course, the other option is just to do nothing. So there's four potential pathways here. Trade for Micah Parsons, trade for Trey Hendrickson, sign Jadeveon Clowney, or potentially just do nothing and keep the roster as it is. We're going to be breaking down all of those today. But the quick answer to, can Green Bay make any of these moves? The answer is yes. First and foremost, when it comes to draft capital, they have all their picks for the next 3 years. For those of you who don't know, you can trade in the NFL draft picks 3 years ahead of time. So Green Bay has all of their picks in 2026, all in 2027, all of them in 2028. They are not expected to get any compensatory picks this upcoming season. They do not have any other draft picks banked. They have not traded away any future draft picks. And so that is where they currently stand. They have any sort of draft capital that they would need. They do not have any extra. They are not lacking in any draft capital. It's just seven picks for each of the next 3 years that they would have at their disposal to trade. It should also be worth noting here, and I think it is worth discussing as part of this conversation, that if Green Bay were to trade away significant draft capital, first round picks, right? It's worth noting that, A, this is a very young team in Green Bay that has a lot of still young up-and-coming players. But more importantly, and what I wanted to kind of go with this, is that they have done an incredible job drafting in the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounds as of late. In fact, you can make a pretty significant argument they've done a much better job on their day two and three selections than they've actually done on day one. It doesn't mean to say that you just want to give away your first round picks and be like, we actually don't need them. It doesn't always work that way. And in general, if you look at drafting around the league, first round picks still incredibly valuable. But from a Green Bay point of view, you could make an argument of like, actually, if they hadn't had their first round picks, since Jordan Love, like the rest of their draft classes have kind of filled in some of those gaps, and they might be able to get away with that a little bit more than other teams because of their ability to draft later in rounds. It doesn't always work that way, but it should be noted nonetheless. So when it comes to draft capital, yes, they have any draft capital that they would potentially need to make a deal for Trey Hendrickson or Micah Parsons. When it comes to money, it's a much more interesting conversation. Now, they have plenty of 2025 cap space. They can take on, heck, right now, if they wanted to, they could take on Trey Hendrickson and Micah Parsons in 2025, because the way that you're going to restructure those deals is going to be pretty minimal hit in 2025, and then they're going to get exponentially larger as time goes along. They have plenty of money right now. You could do a lot of things with that money in 2025. So the answer is, in 2025, they can do pretty much anything they want. It becomes much more complicated in 2026, where they are already right up against the salary cap, and it's going to be complicated to start having to open up some of this money. And they're going to have some free agents they probably want to sign. They're going to have maybe a free agent or two that they would like to go out and sign themselves. And they're going to have to do a little bit of roster gymnastics starting in 2026. That is, by the way, without signing a big-time free agent or bringing in via trade a player like Micah Parsons and then giving him a massive deal, or bringing in a Trey Hendrickson and giving him a massive deal. There's already going to have to be some, again, salary cap logistics that are done to try to make sure that they can kind of keep the team where it needs to be, sign the players they want to sign. If they want to do something in free agency, maybe even in the mid-tier range, they're going to have to do a little bit of work to get to that point. It's not just, we have all this space. Look at what we can do. It's not that simple. 2026 starts getting a little bit more complicated. That being said, you do have some levers that you can pull. The first thing is that Kenny Clark and Elgton Jenkins, releasing those two players in and of itself, can save you up to $34 million in cap space next year. Now, that might be already a lever that they plan on pulling just to sort of get to the point where they want to operate as the team that can actually go out and sign a free agent or re-sign some of their own guys. So it may not entirely fill this void of being able to go get a player, but you end up in 2026 as this situation where you can, if you want, start the borrow from future salary cap game. And I would argue that when you have the youngest team in football in back-to-back years, and you're a playoff team and you're a contender and you're ready to make that move, that should be a lever that at some point in time with a young up-and-coming team that you should be pulling. In fact, I would argue if you're not doing a little bit of that, I'm not saying you have to go and max the credit card out, right? But if you're not doing some of it, you're probably not doing your job correctly as an NFL general manager and as an NFL team, and you're just leaving meat on the bone every single year when you should be going out and trying to do some of those things to improve your team as much as possible. So freeing up some salary cap space potentially by releasing Kenny Clark and Elgton Jenkins and starting that borrowing game by kicking some money down the road, you can definitely make this work in 2026 and beyond if you wanted to go and get a Trey Hendrickson or a Micah Parsons. Jadeveon Clowney's a one-year deal, and it's a totally different story and much cheaper in all likelihood. So anything that you can do for Micah Parsons, anything under that, of course, becomes just easily doable if you can figure out a way to get Micah Parsons, who we'll get to, but is going to be the highest paid defensive player in all of football. In addition to releasing Elgton Jenkins and Kenny Clark, we talked about, well, there's going to be some players that you want to re-sign next year from your own guys. Well, let's talk about that for a second. Let's look at some of these key free agents for Green Bay in 2026. You could at least theoretically, and I'm not saying I'm there all the way with all of them, but you could at least theoretically start making some pretty interesting arguments. All right, well, Quay Walker's a free agent. Well, what if you were to let him walk in? What if Tyron Hopper is ready to take that next step? He kind of looks ready to be a more significant contributor in 2025. I would expect him to even be more so in 2026. Could you go with Tyron Hopper and Edgerrin Cooper in 2026? Yeah, maybe. And what if Micah Parsons is the guy that you go for, who can also play some off-ball linebacker? That gives you another option as well. You still have Isaiah McDuffie under contract. Like, it's not the craziest scenario in the world to say, all right, maybe we wouldn't need to bring a Quay Walker back. How about Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs? All right, you know, you might want one of those players back potentially, but theoretically, you have Matthew Golden, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Savion Williams. You have kind of four key guys already. And again, you would potentially still have some draft capital you could go spend. You kind of have Williams and Golden coming in to potentially replace Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs down the road. It's not the craziest scenario in the world. Kingsley and Igbari, all right, he'd be gone, but you just drafted Baron Sorrell and Colin Oliver to kind of take his spot, not to mention you're trading or signing a defensive end in this situation, so that helps mitigate that. Sean Ryan and Rashid Walker, Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton, who you've already drafted. And like the only other one of significance is kind of Malik Willis, and you're going to probably have to figure out that backup quarterback spot one way or the other anyway. So you can actually make some pretty significant arguments of like, hey, yeah, they've got some of their own free agents, but if things go according to plan, they kind of have a lot of their replacements already in place. Now, there are some issues with this line of thought. The first is that we just talked about releasing Kenny Clark and Elgton Jenkins as a part of a way to get this money to help, you know, sort of reshape your team next year after maybe going out and getting one of these players and just sort of needing it for operating expenses, practice squad, et cetera, next year. Well, that in and of itself, and we talked about letting these players walk like Sean Ryan, Rashid Walker, and you know some of the other ones, right? Well, that in and of itself creates some problems along the offensive and defensive lines. On the offensive line, you've now let, in this scenario, Rashid Walker, Sean Ryan, and Elgton Jenkins go. And yes, you have Jordan Morgan, Anthony Belton, who might be ready to step up. You've got Aaron Banks already signed. You've got Zach Tom already signed and under contract. Awesome. That's it. You need one more. And the only one on the roster right now that's even maybe in that conversation and would have to play center in this discussion would be Jacob Monk. So you're hurting your depth and even your starting lineup pretty significantly along the offensive line by losing Rashid Walker, Elgton Jenkins, and Sean Ryan in this scenario. Do you have enough pieces that are ready to step up? Are Anthony Belton and Jacob Monk going to be ready in 2026? And then your answer to that might be, well, yeah, but they have next offseason. Well, if you're going to go out and spend all of your money and trade away a bunch of your draft picks, you are limiting the amount of, you may not have the money to spend on a free agent offensive lineman, and you're not going to have a first round pick to replace somebody. You might be waiting on a day two or day three pick to help you out along the offensive line, which is not always the best case scenario, and your depth could really be a significant issue. Could you get by with Jordan Morgan at left tackle, Aaron Banks at left guard, Jacob Monk at center, Anthony Belton at right guard, and Zach Tom at right tackle? yeah, you probably could get by with that. Is it good enough? Is there enough depth there? That's a question you'd have to answer. The other player we talked about was Kenny Clark. All right, what do you have left at defensive tackle? Kenny Clark is a key cog in the middle of that defensive line. You would still have Devontae Wyatt. You've already guaranteed his fifth-year option next year. Colby Wooden, Carl Brooks, Warren Brinson, Nasir Stackhouse, maybe. Are those five good enough without Kenny Clark? I would say that there's probably still a pretty significant Kenny Clark size hole in that defensive line that you would need to replace in some way. Again, if you're trading away a first round pick, you're not going to have that to go out and try to replace him, and you may not have the money to go spend either. These things can inherently become problems. So you're going to lose some key players. You're going to lose some depth. You're not going to have much money to spend because you're going out and making an aggressive move now if they were to make one of these moves. You have no first-round pick if you were to trade for Micah Parsons, or maybe no second-round pick if you're going to trade for a Trey Hendrickson. And what you are ultimately kind of doing here, if you really think about this in a logical way, is you are trading a lot of depth for a star. In the Micah Parsons instance, and in the biggest, most obvious one here, where you're going big game hunting and going for Micah Parsons, you're trading away future first-round picks. A young player probably maybe going in that. We'll talk about the trade, you know, and what it would take to get him in just a moment. But you're probably trading away some young, talented players and assets that are going to be key, you know, pieces for you down the road. Not to mention, you're going to have to release some players. You're going to have to not re-sign some players. And what you're ultimately doing is, even if those young players come up and can play for you, maybe you can fill some of those starting spots, but your depth ultimately takes a hit. And it's an exchange for a massive big-time player in Micah Parsons. Is that something you want to do? Your answer can be yes, and I can understand the argument for it. Stars win you championship games. Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, Micah Parsons, if Jordan Love, Edgerrin Cooper, a couple others can get in that conversation. Now we're talking about, wow, they have an unbelievable core of star players on this team, and Micah Parsons can help you get there. But if they don't have the depth, if some of these players go down with injuries, or they don't have a couple of the other starters on the offensive line or defensive line, some key positions that you need because you had to release some of those players and move on from some of those players in order to afford that star player in the first place, those things can definitely end up costing you. I don't have a perfect answer for you one way or the other. This is a choose your own adventure. I'm just laying out the obvious facts here of you're going to have to choose between some of this. Unfortunately, this is not one where you can choose column A and column B and have all of it all at once all the time. You're going to have to make some difficult choices here one way or the other. Either we're not going to be able to go get that star player, or we're going to have to sacrifice some of our depth and some good players in order to get that super unbelievable player that we would really like to have. So I think there's ways, though, to make that salary cap work. And again, the short answer is yes. You have the draft assets, and you have the salary cap space needed if you want to go in that direction, but there's going to be some costs that come along with it. I will also add on top of this, if you do want to trade away a young player as part of either of these deals, again, if you're going for Hendrickson or Parsons, they do have some young players that theoretically could make some sense. Romeo Doubs, maybe not like the youngest player, right? But he's in his fourth year, still young enough. With all the talent that you already have at wide receiver accumulated, and with him probably needing to leave next year in free agency and not being able to afford him because of all the things we just discussed, you could theoretically put him in a deal. Luke Musgrave would be another. Luke Musgrave has not come along, and I don't know what like that would count for. Is that like a fifth round pick, fourth round pick? Like what he would actually, you know, count for in the trade? I'm not sure what it would be at this point. But Luke Musgrave, I could see them saying like, "Hey, we've got Tucker Kraft, John Fitzpatrick's come along nicely. Ben Sims could be our three." Wouldn't stun me if they would be willing to put him in a deal. Rashid Walker is a starting offensive tackle that has a ton of value for Dallas, where they've had some injury issues already along their offensive line. You could put him in a deal. They get a starting offensive lineman back in return. I think he has less value in Cincinnati right now because they've already put some money and resources into their offensive tackle positions. But for Dallas, that could be somebody that they're ultimately interested in. LVN is a really interesting conversation piece here. I think it's less likely. I think Green Bay really wants to hang on to him. I think we're starting to see some signs from LVN, but that's an interesting one. You would still have Rashawn Gary and then your new shiny toy at defensive end. Plus, you would potentially have Kingsley Enagbare, Baron Sorrell, Colin Oliver. You would really have a nice mix of players, even if LVN wasn't on the team. He could be a huge part of any sort of trade. Do I think Green Bay wants to do that? No, but it's possible. Quay Walker. If Quay Walker is one of these players that you're going to have to let walk because you're bringing on a Trey Hendrickson, or you're bringing on a and Micah Parsons, he could be a player that you throw in the deal. And Cincinnati and Dallas probably both want some players in return that can come in and help them right now. Quay could theoretically help both of those teams. Javon Bullard. Javon Bullard's another one where if you're Green Bay, you know, if everyone's healthy, Valentine, Nixon, Hobbs at corner, Williams and McKinney at safety, you've got this second round pick that can't get on the field readily, at least not with ease. They're going to try to probably create some slot snaps for him. But one of these teams, Dallas or Cincinnati, could say, yeah, we just think he could be a really great safety if he could just play safety and maybe has a little bit more value there. I'm not saying any of these should be just like handed out and you're trying to get rid of them, but they do have some young players that Green Bay could trade away that is not going to break them as a team that could help some of these teams like Cincinnati or Dallas as they try to still make a push in 2025 as teams that are still ultimately trying to compete. The next question that we have to answer here, now that we've answered the question, is can Green Bay do it? Do they have the draft capital? Do they have the players? Do they have the salary cap space to do it? The answer is yes. The next thing is, do they need to do it? Do they legitimately actually need a defensive end? It's an interesting question. So where are they at with defensive end right now? Rashawn Gary, Lucas Van Ness, Kingsley Nagbare, Bretton Cox. Then you've got Baron Sorrell, fourth round pick this year, who's a little bit banged up with an MCL injury at the moment, but it shouldn't be too long. Colin Oliver, hamstring injury, fifth round pick. We have not seen anything yet. And then Aaron Mosby. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, preseason football is already underway and college football is here, so do not miss any of the action this season on Prize Picks. I had an absolute blast winning last year on Prize Picks, and now I'm gearing up for another epic run in 2025. I've already got a couple deep sleepers in mind, and I'm going to be very, very high on Tucker Kraft this upcoming season as well. Now, you may be new to Prize Picks, so let's break it down super easy. Prize Picks is incredibly simple to play. You just pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and if you get your picks right, you could cash in and win up to 2,000 times your money. That's why Prize Picks already has millions of users, because it's the best place to win cash while watching sports. And there's never been a better time to sign up than today. So download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks, run your game. That's your defensive end group at the moment. Last year, these numbers are per PFF. Rashawn Gary had 47 pressures, LVN had 20 pressures, and Nagbare had 25, Bretton Cox had 17, and Aaron Mosby had 9. 118 total pressures amongst those five defensive ends. Gary, and then again, these numbers are per PFF, Rashawn Gary had 8 sacks, LVN had 4, and Nagbare had 5, Bretton Cox had 4, and Aaron Mosby had 1. 22 sacks as a team, or as a defensive end group, I should say. 118 pressures with those five defensive ends. Again, we don't know what Baron Sorrell and Colin Oliver are capable of quite yet. Some light investments in a fourth and fifth round pick made into those two. But that group of five that has played and did play last year, 118 pressures, 22 sacks in 2024. In 2023, 2 years ago, Micah Parsons had 103 pressures per PFF. Let me say that one more time. Last year, the five defensive ends combined had 118 pressures. Micah had 103 2 years ago. And last year, it was only down because he missed a little bit of time last year. His pressure rate was still just as good. Still had 70 pressures last year. In 2024, he had 70 pressures, 14 sacks. In 2023, he had 103 pressures and 16 sacks. And in 2022, he had 90 pressures and 14 sacks. This is a player who is capable of getting 100 pressures in a season on his own. Basically what that entire defensive end group did in Green Bay a year ago. Trey Hendrickson, that group of five last year, totaled 22 sacks per PFF. Trey Hendrickson in 2023 had 20 sacks on his own, had 18 last year per PFF on his own. He basically matched Green Bay's defensive end group in sacks as a one-man wrecking crew in Cincinnati. Even Jadeveon Clowney, 2 years ago in 2023, had 71 pressures. That's more than Rashawn Gary and LVN had combined last year. And he had 10 sacks that year as well. LVN and Gary had 12 combined last year. So this is also a player that still has a lot left in the tank. He was down last year, no question about it. 44 pressures and 6 sacks in 2024, but still has some real legitimate pass rush juice that you can utilize. So I would argue that yes, Green Bay can use a upgrade at defensive end. And I've talked about it. I love what Jeff Hafley did last year. I thought he was fantastic, but I thought a lot of the sacks, we talked about it, three games is where they made their hay with all of their sacks. Will Levis in Tennessee, there was 8 sacks, I think, in that game. The Seahawks game where Sam Howell came in and they sacked him a bunch, that was the second one. And then Tua Tagovailoa in Miami where they had the lead and they were able to kind of get after him a little bit on a game where Miami mostly no-showed that game. Those are their three games where they got a bunch of sacks. Even if you want to give them credit, which legitimately so, for the Tagovailoa one a little bit more, the two big ones were Sam Howell and Will Levis. And they kind of got their numbers much better in those two particular games. Without that, and when you saw them go against good offensive lines, it wasn't as good. And I've talked about it as well. If you want to win a Super Bowl, if you legitimately want to be that contender, it is a prerequisite that you have to be able to get to the quarterback with 4. You're not going to make it through an entire playoff run and a Super Bowl with smoke and mirrors and with not being able to get. At some point, you have to say, these are the 4 guys that are rushing and we're going to get home with those 4 because we have to cover with our 7. The disguises and all that stuff isn't going to work. They're going to be onto us. They're going to have a really great quarterback. They're going to have a really potent offense. And we've just got to be able to shut things down with a rush of 4, even when they know it's coming. And at Trey Hendrickson or a Micah Parsons, and even potentially a Jadeveon Clowney, would really help to get them to that level where I don't know right now that they are. I don't know that they can get there with the group that they have. Is it impossible? No. Am I hopeful that DeMarcus Covington gets them headed in the right direction? Yes. But there are still a lot of question marks on that defensive line. So the second question, do the Packers need a defensive end? Need is probably aggressive, but if they want to be an upper echelon group getting home with 4, I think yes. I think that answer is yes, or at least is in the realm of yes. Even if it's not a hard yes, it's still like, yeah, man, it would be really, really be nice to get them to that next level with a pass rush player like the likes of, again, a Micah Parsons or a Trey Hendrickson. Maybe not a strong, like complete need. They still have good players at that spot, but definitely a huge opportunity still to upgrade. The next thing I want to look at is what each of these players would bring. Because I've seen out there, well, Micah Parsons actually is not that good. Okay, let's settle down. Micah Parsons is incredible. And if you didn't see it by 103 pressures 2 years ago, and you know all of that, I don't know what to tell you. He's remarkable. I don't want to hear either of like, yeah, but when he played Green Bay in that playoff game, every single team in a playoff scenario is going to do everything they can to take Micah Parsons out of the game. And you might say, well, then yeah, the teams are going to do that to Green Bay if he's a Green Bay Packer. Yeah, which should free up Devontae Wyatt, Kenny Clark, and Rashawn Gary to go and do their thing because everyone's focused 110% on Micah Parsons, which also, by the way, is why I don't want to trade Rashawn Gary in a deal for that, because I think you still want that second guy so that when teams double and triple team Parsons, Rashawn Gary has the ability to get there with 1 and Wyatt has the ability to get there with a 1-on-1 and Kenny Clark has the ability to get there 1-on-1. So I still want those guys on the unit so that you can still make this really impressive defensive line with one of these guys on it. But Micah Parsons is 26 years old, prime of his career. By the way, just turned 26 in May. PFF's not everything, but my goodness, 89.8 grade as a rookie, followed by 91.6, 92.7, 90.0. This is a consummate 90-plus player every single year that he has played so far. But yeah, but there's been signs of there's not been any signs of decline at all. He is a absolute legitimate stud, upper echelon, big-time NFL player, and when NFL executives are asked to evaluate him, they say the exact same thing. There's multiple articles you can read out there right now and are saying he might be worth 3 first-round picks. That is what the NFL thinks of Micah Parsons and just how dangerous, explosive, dynamic, and dominant he is. So I don't want to hear any of the decline or bad against Green Bay. He is an elite, elite, elite player, and these players do not come across very often. And I want to add one more thing. what he would bring to Jeff Hafley's defense, how Jeff Hafley would be able to utilize a player like this. Imagine just in and of itself, a double A-gap blitz with Edgerrin Cooper and Micah Parsons coming up the middle. And still having, if you kept LVN and Rashawn Gary in this thing, Rashawn Gary and LVN on the edges, Clark and Wyatt, now you've got Cooper and Parsons coming up as double A-gap look. What are you going to do? What are you possibly going to do? Are you going to like pinch everyone inside to make sure that like Parsons is, you know, covered for? And in that case, is like Edgerrin Cooper just going to come free? Good luck with that. And if all of a sudden like you pinch everything inside for Micah Parsons and Parsons and Cooper just drop into coverage like normal linebackers do, and now everyone's focused on that, and Gary and LVN get one-on-ones on the outside and all those guys can just collapse the pocket, and now like Dallas put extra players in to protect. Now it's, you know, you've got your four coming. It's not the four you were necessarily expecting. You've got seven in coverage, and Dallas probably kept a player, or sorry, whoever you're playing against probably kept a player two in to protect in order to make sure that you could pick up a Micah Parsons and a Edgerrin Cooper in that situation. The stuff that he could do, I mean, you could just use him as an off-ball linebacker. You can stand him up against their worst offensive lineman. You can put him on the edge. You can do so many things. And you know Jeff Hafley is going to go completely nuclear with those ideas. And the idea of Parsons and Edgerrin Cooper together in some of those looks is terrifying. And I mean terrifying for opposing offenses. So big time potential if when talking about adding a player like Micah Parsons. This brings you from like a top 10 defense to the potential to be one of the best defenses in the league. That's the difference between no Micah Parsons and Micah Parsons. How about Trey Hendrickson? Now, Hendrickson is 30 years old. He'll turn 31 in December. He's a little bit older. His PFF grades over the last 4 years, 72.3, 85.0, 82.3, and 88.1 this past year. He was fantastic as a pass rusher. You are not getting the guy that's going to do a bunch of different things at a bunch of different places. He's not going to be standing up as an off-ball linebacker. He is a true edge rusher, pass rusher on the outside. He's solid enough against the run, but he is primarily going to be utilized as a big-time pass rusher, which is fine. And that's going to get you somebody on the field that when you have to have it, those third and long moments, or again, when you get into the playoffs and you can only get there with, you have to just bring four and they know who's coming, Trey Hendrickson's going to get a butt ton of attention, and it's going to be very difficult for you to kind of, hopefully the idea would be stop Hendrickson and Gary on the outside. You can remember they've experimented with kicking LVN inside if you want to do that, or if, even if it's just Wyatt and Clark, Wyatt and Brooks, there's so many different, you know, kind of combinations that you could potentially do there. The hope is that that would be a great enough defensive front to really be disruptive and be that group that can get there consistently with four, and having a Trey Hendrickson on that line would help that in a very, very convincing and effective way. And then last but not least, Jadeveon Clowney. This is another one who probably is just more a situational pass rusher at this point in time. I don't think you need to put him in on early downs. You've got other players that can do that. But if you can just let him hunt, get after the quarterback, he still has every right to be able to do that. And like I said, 2 years ago, 71 pressures and 10 sacks just in 2023. Even if that was down last year, I mean, his down year last year, by the way, was 44 pressures. Green Bay's best at the edge, Rashawn Gary, was at 47. In a down year for Clowney last year, he was three less pressures than Green Bay's best pass rusher on the edge in 2024. And again, he was at, 71 in 2023, which again would have been more than Gary and LVN combined last year. So there's still a lot of meat there, and somebody that can give you a consistent pass rush presence on those key downs when you absolutely have to have it. Then the question becomes, now that we've answered what they would bring to the table, that you can afford it if you want, that Green Bay could use another big time pass rusher, the next thing is, what would it actually take to get said players? There's a multitude of articles out there, if you would like to read them, on Micah Parsons and what it would take to get him. As mentioned, I think there was an article, I saw it on Yahoo. I know sometimes they aggregate stuff, but I saw it on Yahoo that said, you know, they pulled like seven NFL executives, and some of them were even willing to say three first round picks. But the consensus for Parsons seems to be two first round picks plus a little bit of sweetener on top of it, whether that be some young players or some additional, like, you know, fourth, fifth round draft picks, I should say, something in that realm. Okay. In addition, you will need to make him the highest paid defensive player in football. For example, TJ Watt, $41 million per year on his deal he just got on a three-year deal. If I'm Micah Parsons, I'm probably thinking $44 million per year on a four-year deal. And Watt, by the way, got 87.8% of his contract guaranteed. What does that contract look like for Micah Parsons? 4 years, $176 million with $155 million guaranteed. That is a massive chunk of change with huge guarantees, but you get him prime of his career, 26, 27, 28, 29. The best years of Micah Parsons are coming to you, and you get the right to be able to pay him that money because you are bringing in one of the elite players in the league. But you are now talking about spending a ton of money on a player and giving up two first round picks and a potential player or pick on top of that, or picks on top of that. That is an exorbitant cost to give anyone. And I should remind everyone, this is a violent sport, and the freakiest of athletes we see get injuries, that's, you know, from time to time, right? Any of them, all of them get injuries from time to time. You give Micah Parsons $176 million with $155 million guaranteed, give two first round picks to get him, plus a young player, maybe another draft pick on top of it, and he pops an Achilles, tears an ACL. Whew. That is a mighty investment for a player that doesn't play it down for you and probably isn't the same player after that. Buyer beware. And again, he could come in and be, you know, Hall of Famer for the next 5 years and never miss a snap. That's the other possibility too. These are the reasons why these are such difficult conversations, and you don't see things like this happen very often. What would Trey Hendrickson cost? The prevailing theory would be about a second round pick and a young player that would be able to come in and contribute for Cincinnati sooner rather than later. I think that's probably about a fair price, but on top of that, you're going to have to give him basically what I would consider the exact TJ Watt deal. Watt maybe gets a little bit more, but Hendrickson's going to say, I had a better year than TJ Watt did last year. I want that deal. Watt's, again, 3 years, $123 million with $108 million guarantee. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. So a second round pick plus a young player plus a three-year, $123 million deal with $108 million guaranteed. As far as Jadeveon Clowney, it's a lot easier. He's a free agent. You don't have to trade anything. The contract he got last year was a two-year, $20 million deal with $12 million guaranteed. They released him. It basically becomes a one-year, $12 million deal. So my expectation for him, something similar. 1 year, probably something between 10 and 15 million. My guess is on the lower side of that. I think probably where it comes in is 1 year, $10 million plus sack incentives on top of it. You could also do the same deal. 2 years, $20 million with $12 million guaranteed. And how that works is you're basically signing them to a 1 year, $12 million deal, but you get to pick up a team option for $8 million in the second year if you want it. And if not, you release them and he goes somewhere else next year. Any of those would potentially work, plus maybe some incentives for sacks on top of that as well. I think that arguably is a more than fair price for Jadeveon Clowney. So that's where it comes into like very different price points. Two first round picks plus a young player plus maybe an additional draft pick on top of it plus a massive contract for Parsons, the biggest contract defensively for Parsons. Hendrickson, basically the TJ Watt deal plus a second round pick and a player in return for him. And Clowney is just a 2 year, $20 million deal with some maybe incentives and $12 million guaranteed, which makes it probably more of a 1 year, $12 million deal. We'll be right back. Hey everyone, I have to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out called Prealcohol. Now, ZBiotics Prealcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Prealcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make Prealcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Now listen, I get it. I was a bit on the fence about Prealcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for a bachelor party, the college basketball tournament, and recently for a friend's epic 40th birthday party, and I'm legit telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Summer is here, which means more opportunities to celebrate the warm weather. And before that backyard barbecue brew, glass of Pinot watching the sunset at the beach, or a cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your Z-Biotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on that next day and all that summer has to offer. Go to zbiotics.com/packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code PACKADAY at checkout. Z-Biotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/packaday and use the code PACKADAY at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our sponsors and use that code PACKADAY. The next thing we have to say then is, would Goody consider it? There's a couple things that I think are worth at least looking at here. One, and as has been noted for weeks now, by all accounts, Brian was very close and engaged in Khalil Mack when he was available. That's noteworthy. Because the deal that everyone says Micah Parsons is most related to is Khalil Mack. He went big game hunting at that time. The deal that Khalil Mack went for was basically 2 first-round picks. It was a little bit less than that. And apparently Chicago just kind of barely outbid Green Bay. So he was willing at that time to say, yeah, I'm willing to give 2 first-round picks-ish, or right, maybe a little bit less than that, plus a major contract for Khalil Mack. Would he go just a little bit more to get Micah Parsons in this scenario? Also, I think the answer to this is no. Does Goody have any desire to have that legacy move? Ron Wolf will forever be known for bringing in Reggie White. And for Ted Thompson, he'll forever be known for bringing in Charles Woodson. This could be the version of that. Now, maybe, is Za'Darius Smith that? Probably not, because of how that ended. It looked like it at the beginning for moments and in that first year specifically, but it didn't end that way. I would probably say that's not a legacy move for Brian Gutekunst. Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs, that's a hell of a legacy offseason and deserves a ton of credit for it. And if they win a Super Bowl with those two being, two of the primary players, it probably is. It probably is a legacy enough move if they actually somehow find a, not somehow, but if they find a way to get to the promised land and win it, I think that will be looked a little bit as a legacy move. But if he goes out and trades for Micah Parsons and they go out and win a Super Bowl, that will be right there, right? He got his quarterback just like Ted and just like Brian did with Favre, Rodgers, and then Love. And then he went out and got his ultra mega stud at defense, just like Wolf did with White and Ted did with Charles. And now Brian does with Micah Parsons, or even maybe a Trey Hendrickson. Maybe that works there as well. The next one is there any pressure on his job? Meaning, Ed Policy made the statement of like, hey, we're not extending anybody at this point in time. I want to be clear here. I don't think Brian's job is in any jeopardy whatsoever. I also don't think it's nothing in the fact that both Matt and Brian are human. And they hear from their new president, CEO, et cetera, that there's not going to be an extension. And even if there's nothing to be worried about, if you're human, don't you still kind of worry and be like, okay, like I need, maybe we need to amp this up just a little bit here. I don't need my job in jeopardy anytime soon. Maybe you do feel like you need to do something a little bit more aggressive. And then of course there is the Ed Policy factor and everything as well, that there is a new president, CEO. I saw somebody tweet, and I don't believe it really at all, that like, oh, yep, Ed Policy wants to come in and make this huge move. Like he wants to make his imprint of like, I'm now in charge. I think the last thing that's going on in Green Bay is Ed Policy is taking over. And after watching Mark Murphy for years being like, haha, I'm going to now get involved in all of the team activities. And Brian, I need Micah Parsons on my desk by Monday morning. Like, I just don't see that being a factor at all. I don't think Goody feels like he needs to do anything legacy. I don't think he feels pressure about his job. I don't think there's Ed Policy factor into any of this. I think the most important one is he has tried to do this before with Khalil Mack, and maybe history repeats itself and he tries to do it again, but maybe history doesn't repeat itself and this time he actually gets the job done. Why the Packers would be interested, we talked about it. In order to be a Super Bowl contender, you have to have some star players that get you across that finish line. And you also need to be able to get home with 4. Guys like Trey Hendrickson, Micah Parsons would give you that ability. Why they would say no thanks? It is an exorbitant cost to pay. There is real legitimate risk involved. You are going to lose future players, future assets, draft picks, young players, etc. because of these moves. You are robbing from your future depth and future teams to bring in Micah Parsons or a Trey Hendrickson right here and right now. And like I said, and as we've gone over, there will be some costs down the road for that particular type of move. People have asked me, all right, Andy, you've gone through all of this. What would you do? What should Green Bay do? You're going to hate this. You're going to absolutely hate this. I actually feel sincerely that I don't think there's actually a wrong move here at this point in time. How could that be? All right. I think that there is risk and reward for all of it. And I can understand going for it in any of these scenarios. And I can understand why you wouldn't want to do any of these. With Micah Parsons, man, I mean, first of all, is there anyone that's going to be upset tomorrow if we hear that Micah Parsons got traded to Green Bay? It's like one of the all-time great offseason move, or like just moves by Green Bay, period. We will be talking about it forever, good, bad, or whatever happens. We will talk about that day, that moment forever if it happens, right? It could be that this is the move that puts them over the top. It could be the Reggie White, Charles Woodson move. It could be the Damian Lillard move. You go all in, you get that type of player, just doesn't quite fit the way that you expected, and it ends up, or maybe ends in injury and just becomes a disappointment. There's a lot of reward that could be there, but there is a significant amount of risk that goes into that as well. I would be for it. I would understand it. But I also, my general GM philosophy would be, I can't give up two first-round picks plus young players or other draft picks plus give up a massive contract. It's just, there's too much other stuff that you can buy with all that stuff to just say, I just want Micah Parsons with that. That's my general rule of thumb. But man, it's Micah freaking Parsons. I can understand yes, and I can honestly understand no. Trey Hendrickson, 30 plus years old. That gives you a little bit more cause for concern. And the second round pick and the player, no issue whatsoever. But now again, you're going to have to release players down the road, maybe not re-sign some players. There, you start, it's not just, it's like almost trading, you know, Elgton Jenkins, Kenny Clark, a second round pick, a young player. And, you know, you lose out whoever that second round pick would have been on a cheap contract. There's a lot that goes into that. I personally would probably make a run at Trey Hendrickson, but I can also understand why there would be some hesitation by anyone to say like, yeah, I think, you know, is he the missing piece? Does he get you over the top enough? Who's that young player that needs to go back into in return to them as well? I think those are all interesting, you know, kind of conversation points. By the way, I saw some people say like, well, I would do it, but not if that young player is Edgerrin Cooper. Edgerrin Cooper's not going anywhere. Okay. He's safe. Don't worry. Edgerrin Cooper is safe at home in Green Bay. You don't have to worry about that in any way, shape, or form. Jadeveon Clowney. Actually, let me go back to Hendrickson just for a second. I think you can make an argument that like Hendrickson is like the perfect middle ground here of like, I don't want to do nothing. I think there's a window here. I think there's a real opportunity here to do something special. Clowney probably isn't quite enough. Micah just might be too much, too cost exorbitant to do something like that. Three first round picks or two first plus all the stuff, plus the contract. It's just too much. Hendrickson, I feel like is a little bit more of like, all right, the contract's big, but like he deserves it and earns it. If he was a Green Bay Packer, you would give it to him pretty easily. And then like, I can survive a second round pick plus a young player. That's not the worst thing in the world. I can get by with that. It feels like the Goldilocks of like Jadeveon Clowney or doing nothing is too cold and Micah Parsons is too hot, but Trey Hendrickson feels just right. And going back to Clowney, I kind of with Colin Oliver being banged up the way that he's been, and with, you know, Baron Sorrell having the MCL, you know, Brenton Cox looks fine. I don't think he looks anything dynamic. And just giving yourself a little bit more depth there, so should something happen to Rashawn Gary or LVN, plus bringing in another player who can actually get you some legitimate pressure, and that I think, you know, Jeff Hafley would find a really fun way to utilize him as well. That makes sense to me. I wouldn't hate that at all. But I can also understand, like we talked about, of like, is it enough? Does it really move the needle? But for only like $10 million, I'm kind of being like, all right, I'll take the chance on that. So I can see both sides of it as well. And doing nothing, there's a lot of hype around LVN and how he's looked so far. Rashawn Gary's put together some really impressive seasons. Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, you have some of the pieces and you've already invested now in DeMarcus Covington, not like a ton of money or anything, but DeMarcus Covington to say, hey, can we get the ROI? Plus at some point, Colin Oliver, Baron Sorrell should come back. Do you get anything out of them? Can Brenton Cox take a step? You know, I think all of these are interesting questions. I think doing nothing feels a little bit like there's some missed opportunity there, but I also said like could understand of being like, hey, we're going to go into the season, see how they do. And then at the trade deadline, if we feel like we need to make an adjustment, maybe we'll look at what's available at that point in time. I could see something like that too. So this is a lame answer of like, if you told me they traded for Micah, traded for Hendrickson, signed Jadeveon Clowney or did nothing, I'm not upset with any of those. In fact, like at least two of them I'm very excited by and the other two I'm totally fine with. And on the flip side, if you told me they didn't get Micah because the cost was too high, same thing with Hendrickson with the contract plus the pick, or that, you know, they just didn't want to get in the Jadeveon Clowney business, I understand all of those as well. I can easily see, and I'm not trying to just take both sides here, I can easily see both sides of it. And I think this is where Goody has to make the ultimate decision of, does he want to be more aggressive and ultimately make a move and take a chance on one of these players? So personally, if I'm going to say what I would do, I would probably do Hendrickson here. I think I take the middle ground. I think I take the just right feel of I'm getting a big time player, really helping my pass rush. I'm going to give up like a second round pick, Javon Bullard. I think that feels really fair. I think they get a good safety, young, talented player, second round pick. And then I think, and if it's more than that, like I probably just say no, like I'll throw in a sixth if you really want it, something like that. But that's probably about as high as I'm willing to go. And then I'll give him the TJ Watt contract. I feel okay with that. I think they can get by with that. And I think he adds a really fun piece to this defense. Sign me up. That's probably what I would do, but I can understand all of them sincerely. As far as fans go, I asked, would you rather Micah Parsons for two firsts, a young player plus the highest contract for a defender, a second round pick plus a young player for Trey Hendrickson, a $10 to $15 million deal and a 1-year contract for Jadeveon Clowney, or none of the above? And as of 10:38 p.m. Central Time, with 5,217 votes, the leader was Micah Parsons. 54.6% said that they would do the Micah Parsons trade. Next up, 26.8% said they would do the Trey Hendrickson trade. 10% said that they would do none, and 8.5% said they would just sign Jadeveon Clowney. What would Green Bay be most interested in? My guess is staying put. And after that, my guess would be Trey Hendrickson. My expectation for what will ultimately happen is that you already know. The Packers operate in a very specific way. While I think I wanted to dive into the reality of this situation so that hopefully everyone can be a little bit more educated around the water cooler in this conversation that continues to take place and will continue to take place until both of these players are signed and or traded to a destination, I still think that the vast majority of the outcomes in the multiverse end up with probably Micah Parsons being a Cowboy, maybe Trey Hendrickson being a Bengal, but at the end of the day, neither of them are Green Bay Packers. Same thing goes for Jadeveon Clowney, unless there's some sort of big injury that would happen and maybe they pick up Clowney in that scenario, maybe, but we know how Green Bay operates. And if you told me today that Micah Parsons or Trey Hendrickson got traded, went to the highest bidder, the odds to me that Green Bay is actually the one that's that highest bidder would be very surprising, if not very, very exciting if that did end up happening. So just to recap one more time, can they make these moves? The answer is yes, but there will be some costs associated with it. Does Green Bay need a pass rusher? Need is maybe strong, but I'm going to actually say the answer is yes. I think all of these players, specifically Parsons and Hendrickson, would bring something very unique to this Jeff Hafley defense and ultimately bring it to the next level. All of them are going to have a cost. Micah Parsons, multiple picks, multiple firsts, plus some other stuff, plus the highest paid defensive contract. Hendrickson, second rounder, plus a player. Jadeveon Clowney, just a double digit, you know, $10 million contract, something in that regard. I think Goody would at least have conversations about it. I think Green Bay would have some level of interest. I think they ultimately will probably stay the status quo. And I think that is very understandable for why they would want to do that, even if fans might be frustrated and want that big move. And my ultimate, again, expectation is that they stay pat, keep with the guys that they have, and see if these guys can go out and win it for them and maybe course correct around the trade deadline if they need to do something a little bit more aggressive. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for sticking with me through this very long and detailed, hopefully, episode. I appreciate you guys a ton. Let me know in the comments below. What would you do? Trade for Micah? Trade for Trey? Sign Clowney? Or do absolutely nothing? Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Itaka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gessford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle-Stinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, and Craig. See you guys tomorrow after joint practices. I'll be live immediately following it, so check that out. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.